As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
The Athletic.
Instead of taking up that gym membership that you wouldn't use even if the gyms were open, how's about subscribing to The Athletic for just £4 a month as a New Year's resolution? You'll get unrivaled football coverage with analysis and in-depth features from the very best writers around, exclusive Q&As with Athletic staff, and ad-free versions of all of The Athletic's podcasts, including this one. Find out more and sign up today at theathletic.com/totally.
Totally Football Show, European edition. On the way today, Schalke win, Bayern trip, Madrid have problems with white powder, and there's some top quality draw in Amsterdam. All that plus Dreamy Hakimi, Parma drama, and Benzema sextape blackmail latest in this Totally Football Show European edition in association with Paddy Power. Hello, listener. Hey, thanks for joining us, by the way. It is Tuesday, the 12th of January, 2021, but you knew that. And I'm James Richardson. Probably you're also across that. And I'm joined by the regular gang. Hello, James Horncastle. Hello, Julian LaRose. Hey, Alvaro Romeo. And hello, Raphael Honigstein. Hey, I get excited every week about this time, but this week particularly so, because it seems like there are so many great stories to bring our listener this time. Hey, Jules.
Yes, they are. I mean, certainly in France, it was a really good weekend where Lyon had a win to champions, which is good. Didn't happen to them for a long time. They have a very strong team. They have a really good chance to win the league, but it's also Mauricio Pochettino's first win in charge as a PSG manager. They beat Brest 3-0. And it was a good night for his return to the Parc des Princes. The Ultras had a nice banner to welcome him back, even if there was no one there, of course. But yeah, it was cool.
What did the banner say?
18 years later, because obviously when he left the club was 18 years ago, it's good to have you welcome back, captain, because obviously he's left as a PSG captain.
Oh, that's nice. I hope you've got something left over for your moment of the weekend there, Jules, because...
I thought that was it.
That wasn't the moment of the weekend yet, but it's going to be very shortly. It was just a general appreciation of what a huge weekend, I mean, particularly in the Bundesliga. But I tell you what, just to avoid any other kind of premature spaffing of top events this weekend, let's get your moment of the weekend. Let's start with Rafa, though. Rafa.
Well, difficult to choose from because we had many big moments in Germany. I think it has to be Schalke winning against Hoffenheim, though, especially the first goal from Matthew Hoppe, hat-trick hero from the US of A, avoiding that Tasmania-Berlin record of 31 games without a win, Schalke ending their run at 30, courtesy of that win.
It was a Hoppe finish for Schalke. James, your moment of the weekend.
Well, I liked listening to Simone Inzaghi, the Lazio coach, who had lost his voice to such an extent that Rino Gattuso, the Napoli coach, who was basically waiting to be post-match interviewed, he'd also lost his voice and said that they both sounded like Cesar Cosmi, and that they just had such gravelly voices by the end of their games. But moment of the week probably has to be Josip Iličić's performance against Benevento. His teammate Luis Muriel said it was like he was floating over all the rest of us. He was that good.
He was balletic.
Levitating, just, you know, on another level, James. Zen.
Right, super. Sergi Cosmi, by the way, if you know, you know. Alvaro, what's your moment of the weekend?
Well, it has to be the color of the weekend because it's been white. Pretty much the whole country has been snowed in, especially the center of Spain, Castilla, Madrid. And the ramifications of that is probably the most interesting thing. The fact that Real Madrid Real Madrid's plane was in the runway for 4 hours on Friday, waiting to take off to Pamplona. The fact that Atlético de Madrid versus Athletic de Bilbao game was cancelled or postponed as well. So I think that the controversy between what La Liga wanted the clubs to do and what the club should have done, probably not travel from Madrid anywhere, is the big issue of the weekend, yeah.
Yeah, 8 inches of snow falling in 24 hours, thanks to Storm Filomena. We'll hear much more about that shortly. Julien, though, your moment of the weekend.
Yeah, so I mentioned already Lyon and PSG, and maybe my moment of the weekend, it came just before the weekend, but has to be Karim Benzema and the Valbuena sextape story, where Karim will now have to face trial for this incredible story that has been dragging on for 6 years now. And we will have to wait another at least 6 months to see the trial starting and Benzema being in front of the judges. But I just still find it an incredible story. So that has to be the moment of the week.
This story never goes away. It never goes away, this story. It's like we were talking about this when we had a TV show on BT Sport. That was a long, long time ago. It feels like it's Calciopoli.
That's exactly what I was going to say. This is pure, you know, BT EFS stuff, territory. This is incredible.
Sorry, can I just ask, is this a second series?
That's the new Netflix. That's the new Netflix documentary. It's the same stuff. I mean, he risked 5 years in jail and €75,000 fine. I don't think
that's what he's facing.
That's what he's facing for obviously having taken part in the blackmail in the Macho Valbuena sex tape story. He's accused of trying to blackmail Valbuena to help his best friend,
right,
Karim Zenati, who had the sex tape himself, who seems, according at least to the investigation and the police, that Zenati and Benzema were both trying to get money out of Valbuena. It looks like Karim Benzema is quite eager, actually, for the trial to explain himself and show people that he never asked Valbuena for anything or any money at all. But we know from phone taping and recordings that maybe that's not completely true, so we will have to see. But it's just,
I'd still rather watch Bridgerton personally.
Oh, you lying, that's not true. You would not want to watch Karim Benzema facing trial for blackmailing Mathieu Valbuena for his sex tape.
It's got nothing on Bridgerton.
Will they play the sex tape, Jules?
I don't know, but have you seen the sex tape?
You're not saying no. I'll move on.
But the thing about it is, what was also very shocking is Mathieu Valbuena and Karim Benzema had a chat in Benzema's room at Clairefontaine before, when they were with the national team preparing for a game with France, right?
Right.
Then Benzema called his friend Karim Zenati, who has the video, who asked Benzema to speak to Valbuena to, you know, sort it out, as they say. Mm-hmm. And then it's the way Benzema and Zenati talk about Valbuena. Poor little Mathieu Valbuena, you know, little bicycle, which is his nickname, of course. And the way Benzema especially, you know, like some of the things he says on Valbuena, how he qualifies him, to put him that way, or insults him even to his mate Zenati, which I think shocked a lot of people in France when all those tapes were made public. From the beginning, it's just crazy. I know Bridgerton is great, right, but this will be very special too, I think.
Okay. I see a Totally Football Show Europe spin-off series, the Benzema tapes. Jules, we'll talk more about that afterwards.
I think this is definitely done our, you know, stuff.
Okay. Great. Well, let's get underway with some of the football that took place over the last couple of days. And our first protocol is, yes, the Bundesliga.
The Totally Football Show European Edition's Moment of the Weekend, brought to you by Paddy Power. Defences may be looking shaky at the moment, but Paddy's offers are rock solid. If one leg of your 4-plus-fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet. Max free bet £10, minimum odds 1 to 5 per leg. Online exclusive, no shop bets. T's and C's apply. 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
Sounding a little bit like the Valbuena sex tape there. Those are Mönchengladbach commentators celebrating the extraordinary 3-2 victory that Borussia Mönchengladbach had this weekend over Bayern Munich. Raphael Honigstein, the original classicer, this, and a Bayern Munich team who had conceded first in each of their previous 8 Bundesliga games but had come back to avoid defeat in each one of them. This time they went 2-0 up, a dangerous scoreline.
Certainly was for them, James. They couldn't handle it for some reason. They'd actually played really well up until going 2-0 up. Leon Goretzka, the scorer of the Bayern second goal, called it the best 30 minutes of the season. But then they lost their way quite dramatically. They made silly mistakes in the build-up. The defensive line was pretty shoddy. They weren't sharp at the back either. And they conceded 3 goals, 2 before half-time and then another one. And when they tried to chase the game, there was actually very little coming from them, which brought the lack of options on the bench into sharp relief. So a combination of all sorts of factors combining to what was in the end a deserved defeat. Not necessarily one I think they will have Bayern too worried, because it is only the second time this season. But still, one or two signs that they might have to perhaps change things a little bit when it comes to playing their high line in light of the lack of freshness and lack of coordination at the moment.
It's only the second time in 54 games that Bayern have lost in all competitions. Just to talk about the goals a little bit, Goretzka's goal, which put Bayern 2-0 up, was pretty nice. But then that Stindl turn and pass to set up Hoffmann to pull them back into the game, Gladbach, and then he sets Hoffmann up again before Neuhaus wins it with the third goal. Stindl looking pretty special there.
Yeah, Lars Stindl is probably the equivalent of Thomas Müller for this Gladbach team, you know, experienced, leading the line from the front as the captain. I mean, Müller is not the captain, but he plays a similar role when it comes to kind of coaching the team. And of course, this is a Gladbach team without Marcus Thuram, who's still suspended for that spitting incident earlier in the season. But they don't seem to need him. Jonas Hofmann has come back really strongly after his injury. Lars Stindl doing great work there. And yeah, it was a deserved win. I mean, Gladbach waited for Bayern's mistake and then really capitalized. And when they had to defend, unlike in some of those big games in Champions League, they managed to see it out and hold fast, as it were. So yeah, really, really good performance from them.
Foal Train BMG asks, what does Raphael make of Gladbach's very odd season so far, drawing against very beatable teams, but progressing in the Champions League and now beating Flick's Bayern once again? Can they push on towards the Champions League places from here, or is the squad too stretched? And will they keep Rosa?
Wow, that's quite a few questions at the same time. I think Marco Rosa will be, I don't want to say for definite, but I think there's a strong chance that he will leave in the summer and go over to Borussia Dortmund. That's a badly kept secret that he's talking to them. There is a release clause. We don't know how high it is, but it looks as if it's going to happen. Can they push into the Champions League places? Well, they should be. They finished in the Champions League places last year. They're strong enough to target top four. The problem that they have is, of course, that with Bayern, Leipzig and Dortmund, they have 3 teams that are stronger than them. So it is effectively only one place they're really fighting for. And there is strong competition in Leverkusen this year. But they can still do it. Why is it that they have sort of an uneven season? I think it was to be expected with the Champions League and those huge games. We've seen a drop-off in form between the Champions League and the Bundesliga, where Borussia Mönchengladbach's hard work sometimes they've been unable to replicate that form twice in the same week. And they've dropped a lot of points against opposition that they should have beaten, giving away one of the leads, that sort of stuff. So an encouraging sign, but I think ultimately it's still going to be very, very difficult to make top four again for the reasons we mentioned.
They also look like they're about to get a very promising player from Ligue 2 in Kouadio Kone.
Yeah, but he'll stay in France until the end of the season, I think.
Still, I think it's an exciting signing.
Very exciting, yeah. And Milan wanted him as well, and Gladbach got him.
One thing that I found quite puzzling is the fact that after Neuhaus scored the third goal for Gladbach, Bayern didn't really create any chance or any clear chance. And I think Rafa has referred to this. But at the same time, why did Hansi Flick not move the bench a little bit more? And, you know, I think that only one sub was made. Kingsley Coman came onto the pitch. Is it because Flick doesn't really trust on the rest of the players he's got in the squad?
Well, that's a question that was asked of him, and he denied it strongly. He said, we felt the game was going that I had the best players on the pitch and there was no need to change necessarily. Kingsley Coman was the obvious one. Serge Gnabry, unfortunately, was injured. He might be back in the cup this week. But yeah, there is an underlying debate, if you will, about Bayern's depth and the players on the bench not being quite of the same calibre that they had last year. Last year, in this type of situation, they would have been able to throw on Philip Coutinho, for example. And this year, it is Jamal Musiala, who's very talented, but perhaps not the first go-to creative player, you know, as a treble winners that you'd think of. So there is that. And there is this kind of secret, silent, if you will, tug of war going on as well between Hansi Flick and Hasan Salihamidžić, who's the sporting director. I think Salihamidžić thinks that the players that were brought in are perhaps not given enough chances to play. Marco Rocca would be an example. And I think Hansi Flick seems to suggest, and I don't want to say it was a political message that he was sending, but just through deducing from, you know, his decision-making, he seems to think that maybe those players brought in are not really the solution for this Bayern side to make them truly stronger. But they've already said they won't buy this January. So they'll have to make do with what they have.
Well, for now, Bayern are still top of the Bundesliga, still 2 points clear, because Leipzig, their nearest challenger, went and lost 3-1 at home to Borussia Dortmund. Wow. Erling Haaland back and on fire. Rafa.
He was. But the whole Dortmund attacking department, as it were, they were brilliant. The goals, all three of them were sensational. Beautiful movement between Royce and Sancho, had a very good game. Haaland, Gio Reyna as well. They were brilliant. And ultimately, I think that was the difference. You know, Leipzig played pretty well, especially in the first half. They had one or two opportunities. Olmo hit the post when they were 1-0 down. But the individual quality that Dortmund had, combined with what looked a much better organization, both defensively and when it comes to challenging for the ball and, you know, cutting out the supply high up the pitch, was ultimately too much. I think Leipzig would love to have players like Haaland and Sancho and Royce and Reyna. Their players are good, but they're not quite the same level. And that made the difference. So huge win for Dortmund, combined with Bayern's loss. They now feel that they're back in the title race because they're only 5 points adrift. Whereas a couple of weeks before, when Edin Terzic took over, all the talk was about fourth spot and how they had to get back into the Champions League. So they feel that they can aim higher now. And for Leipzig, of course, huge opportunity missed. They could have gone top. They could have put real pressure on Bayern. And now they're kind of nursing their wounds and thinking, you know what, maybe we are only the third best team after all in this league, and it's going to be difficult for us to get anywhere higher than that.
Rafa, Dortmund's form since Edin Terzic took over has been pretty excellent. He's had, what, 3 wins in the last 4. Feels a little bit like he's doing something of a Hansi Flick from last season at Bayern. Are Dortmund convinced that they need to replace him with Marco Rosa?
I think that's still a plan. I think they still feel that's an option. That if they can get Rosa, then he's too good to turn down, because he's such a huge talent and would bring so much in terms of the personality, the energy that they want. I mean, Terzic is doing a very good job, but I'm not sure it's been quite good enough to suggest or to change Dortmund's minds as far as the long-term planning is concerned. Of course, the more he keeps winning, the more that, you know, he might put himself into the sort of Flick stratagem where Dortmund might
begin to think twice about it. But we haven't reached that point just yet.
Okay, well worth you checking out if you haven't seen the goals from this game, the highlights, but in particular, Haaland's run to set up his second goal, which is phenomenal stuff. The other big story, of course, or the biggest other story in the Bundesliga this weekend was Schalke. We'll come on to that a little bit later on, because next up we've got an appointment with Serie A.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show from Muddy Knees Media and The Athletic.
Il cross in mezzo, ancora un colpo di testa, rete! Il pareggio della Roma! Esattamente al minuto 41 nel corso della ripresa, Gianluca Mancini!
Right, James Horncastle, this weekend in Serie A. Big game, Roma-Inter, Sunday lunchtime at the Stadio Olimpico.
Yeah, it was a big game, James, not only because of the rivalry that really emerged between these two teams, from 2006 to 2010, but also, for the occasion itself, because the night before Milan had won, extended their lead at the top of the table against Torino. It put a bit of pressure on both these teams, who, Roma quite surprisingly find themselves in the title race. Inter, because of the amount of money they've spent and sheer presence of Conte on the bench, expect to be challenging for the title. And Roma took the lead. They have, in the early stages, bossed possession. I'd say that Inter had the better chances all the same. Paulo Lopez in goal for Roma, who'd lost his place and wouldn't have been playing in this game had Antonio Mirante, the veteran backup, been available. He was sensational. Made some great saves from Romelu Lukaku. And then Conte made some good tactical changes, I thought. Sort of switched to building up with a back four, put Brozovic next to De Vrij, and they got back into the game. Second half, the way they started it looked like there was only going to be one winner. Hakimi scored an absolutely incredible goal. He's really come good since December. I think that's now six in the league that he's got.
Has he adjusted to the more tactical style in Serie A?
Well, now that he's had 6 months to learn about this thing called tactics, Raf, which are completely foreign to German coaches, where the Bundesliga is pretty amateur compared to Serie A, he's really hit his stride. And I would say that most people, when looking at what happened in the final 20 minutes, they would say when Conte brought Hakimi off, wasn't the kind of tactical decision to expect from such a maestro like Conte, because it seemed to let Roma back into the game.
Well, he took off not only Hakimi, but also Martinez, who scored the other goal, and Vidal as well. And the game completely turned.
The game turned. I think Fonseca deserves some credit as well, bringing on Cristante in midfield, who's been excellent when he's played the last few weeks. And it was all Roma for the final 15 minutes, and they deservedly equalised. Gianluca Mancini, who went close just seconds before getting Roma's second goal, getting them a point. I thought Gonzalo Villar, who has been playing in midfield for Roma over the last few weeks, was one of the signings this time last year. He's really emerged as a really good playmaker for the Giallorossi. But ultimately, I think the point is better for Roma than it was for Inter, who had lost in midweek to Sampdoria. Again, this was a game where they created enough chances to win the game but didn't. And they've got the small matter of the Derby d'Italia coming up against Juventus at the weekend. So it's an interesting time at Inter, James, because there's been a lot of speculation about the future of the ownership of the club. There's obviously a lot of speculation around the future of Christian Eriksen, who didn't feature at all in this game. And Conte, after the game, once again kind of saying, well, the difference in these games kind of comes from, the depth that you've got in your squad, and he's got a deeper squad than anyone. He said that, you know, after signing Hakimi for 40 million in the summer, we didn't sign anybody, by which he meant sign anyone for money, because they brought in the likes of Arturo Vidal, Kolarov, Darmian. And it just felt like he was kind of complaining again when, yeah, other managers just get on with it, with smaller right. budgets, spending less. But Conte will be Conte.
Right. And it was an interesting comment from Beppe Bergami afterwards, who said you kind of need to be a ball breaker like Conte to survive at Inter, because they are a club that previously has put so much pressure and undermined their managers so consistently that you almost need to be just unrelentingly demanding. As it stands, though, they are 3 points now behind Milan, who won Saturday night 2-0 against Torino, managed by their former boss, Marco Giampaolo, of course. And this is before Inter take on Juventus this coming weekend. Now, Juve followed up their victory midweek over Milan with a fine 3-1 win over Sassuolo. Sassuolo, who admittedly got reduced to 10 men right on half-time. But many impressive elements to this game, and one or two worrying bits of injury news as well.
Yeah, it felt a bit like a Pyrrhic victory for Pirlo, because he lost Paulo Dybala, he lost Weston McKennie, although there's some optimism that he'll be available for the Derby d'Italia. McKennie, who's been so good for them, although as we saw in this game, Ramsey has been equally good when it comes to interpreting that role of being kind of a winger slash number 10. Ramsey would score in this game, the go-ahead goal. I think Juventus, for a team that had a man advantage for such a long time in this game, the fact that they didn't win it really until quite late on, a little bit like the Udinese game, raised some questions. But Kulusevski, who came on, was absolutely brilliant. Set up a chance that Ronaldo should have scored from. Ronaldo did get on the score sheet right at the end. For me, I at least this season, it's not a comment on the kind of absolute talent on the players, but for me, Kulusevski should be, when Morata is not fit, and Morata did come back on as a substitute last night, when Morata isn't fit, Kulusevski should be playing next to Ronaldo. Not Dybala. I think he's so good in tight spaces, playing 1-2s and creating chances. He's more the informed player at the moment for me.
Who's your money on this weekend then in the Derby d'Italia?
Well, this is going to be an interesting question for Conte, because Conte lost both of these games last year, and it was kind of surprising given how informed Inter were, particularly in going to the first game at San Siro and kind of disappointed. And Sarri was able to edge the team to victory. And I must say, just as I've made that comment about Dybala, memories come back that Dybala played a starring role in both of those games. I mean, he scored an absolute sensational goal at San Siro, and then the best goal of his career, as he sees it, in the reverse fixture at the Allianz as well.
Punta la porta, Dybala con la punta di piede per Ramsey. Ramsey di nuovo per Dybala, attenzione, Dybala dribbling. Dybala! Il raddoppio della Juventus. Paolo Dybala.
I still think Juventus are more of a work in progress than Inter are, and I think it's going to depend on who they get back fit as well, because De Ligt has tested positive for COVID-19. He missed the game against Sassuolo. Will, in all likelihood, miss this game against Inter. And I think they are, you know, more solid at the back, more able to play that high line that Pirlo wants with him in the team. So kind of inclined to say slight favourites Inter, and boy, do Inter need. I mean, they both do, because even, I mean, looking at the league table at the moment, James, yes, Inter have lost ground on Milan, but Juventus are still 4 points behind Inter, albeit with a game in hand, and 7 points behind Milan. So, I mean, for Juventus to still have a chance of retaining their title, they really need to win this game.
Juve, who are 7 points off the top as it stands, by process of deduction, have Napoli and Atalanta right behind them. We'll be hearing about those two clubs a little bit later on. But restless souls that we are, next up, we're going to head across to Spain.
At Paddy Power, we know competition for the remote control can be fierce at the weekends. So, in order to give the non-football-loving occupants of your house something to do, here are some of our top suggestions. Go for a walk. Walk the dog. Walk to the shops. Go cycling. Cycle the dog. Recycle the dog. Just go! All very good options, we say. And that's not the only one. If one leg of your 4-plus fold ACCA lets you down, get a free bet on all football leagues and all markets. Paddy Power. Max free bet £10, min odds 1 to 5 on each leg, online exclusive, exclude shop bets, T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Smart Speaker, and now ad-free on The Athletic, this is The Totally Football Show with James Richardson.
Hombre de nieve, es feliz y está muy gordo, con la boca, la nariz, dos ojos y en la cabeza, un sombrero.
Alvaro Snow. Storm Filomeno dumped on Spain. The most intense snowstorm in the last 50 years. Is that right?
Well, I wasn't there, but definitely in the last 37 or 38 years,
right.
I would say.
Lots of snow.
Yeah, and many people, James, were stranded in the roads,
right.
And many more couldn't even leave their houses. The roads were collapsed. So yes, yeah, I think that it was pretty strong.
People skiing in central Madrid?
Yeah, absolutely. Snowboarding as well. And many people from the NHS just sending emails or writing tweets asking for anybody to drive them to the hospital so they could work and you know, keep on doing what they have to do. So yeah, it's been pretty chaotic in Spain this weekend. Let's put it this way. And also in La Liga.
Right. I mentioned back at the start, something like 8 inches of snow dropping in 24 hours. And the cold is going to continue. It's predicted to hit minus 12 degrees centigrade by this Thursday. Only one game was a casualty of this in terms of actually being called off last weekend. It was Atletico Madrid's game against Athletic Bilbao. Bilbao's plane to Madrid got turned around because of the heavy snowfall. Real Madrid, though, went ahead with their clash against Osasuna despite major problems in actually leaving the Spanish capital.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that this is pretty disheartening from La Liga, I think, because they have been a little bit pushy as an institution with some clubs like Real Madrid and Rayo Vallecano, Getafe. And the Real Madrid case, I think that is very illustrative because La Liga advised Real Madrid to travel to Pamplona to play against Osasuna. They advised them to travel a day before the game on Friday, which is fine. And probably Real Madrid should have flight to Pamplona on Friday morning, not on Friday evening. But this is another debate. I mean, the thing is that Real Madrid plane with the players inside spent 4 hours in the runway in a snowed-up airport on Friday evening, and by that time on Friday evening the Spanish authorities were recommending not to travel, not to leave home, so the plane had to be there for 4 hours, and when it took off late in the evening, it was the last plane to leave Madrid in 48 hours. That tells you that the situation was quite risky, and you should wonder whether Real Madrid should have taken that plane and traveled to Pamplona in those conditions. The thing is that if they didn't travel to Pamplona, probably they would have faced losing the game, losing 3 points for not having shown up. So they were pretty much compelled to travel to Pamplona, and hence Zinedine Zidane's anger, not only because Osasuna's pitch was not in good conditions, according to him, which, by the way, is pretty much not true. I think that Osasuna's pitch was all right, and nobody really complained about that. Even Toni Kroos, the German player of Real Madrid, was saying that the pitch was all right, and if it was bad, it was bad for both teams. But Real Madrid has reasons to complain about the fact that they had to travel to Pamplona in those conditions. And I think that Rayo Vallecano, who plays in the second division, should be fuming as well, because they had to return to Madrid midway through their trip to the north, to Miranda de Ebro, because the road was totally snowed up. And Getafe, for example, who are playing on Monday against Elche, basically they couldn't travel to the east of Spain, and La Liga sent cars to the Getafe players to travel to Barajas Airport to take a plane to Elche. The thing is that those cars they didn't have the chains, for example, or they weren't like a 4x4 cars. And there is this shameful image of the Getafe players having to push the car just to help the driver to help the driver to start it again. So I don't think that this should have happened in the first place. I think that the teams from Madrid should have never traveled to their games this weekend.
That does sound fair, Alvaro. It's left Real Madrid. They had a 0-0 draw, by the way, of course, away at Osasuna with Karim Benzema, who's been in the news a bit of late, having two goals ruled out for offside in the second half. They now trail Atleti by a point. Simeone's side, Atleti, of course, have three games in hand. Down south, Barcelona romped to their third league win in a row with a mighty 4-0 thumping of Granada. While down the road in Sevilla, in bright sunshine, Sevilla came up with a 3-2 win over Real Sociedad, featuring the first hat-trick of Youssef En-Nesyri's career. I've got a question here about him. This is from Richard David Pike, says, Alvaro, if Sevilla win midweek against Atletico, could they become title contenders? Their next five or six fixtures after this look generous. Also, after his hat-trick, surely En-Nesyri is right now number one striker ahead of Luke de Jong.
I'm going to answer the latter first. Yes, En-Nesyri is Sevilla's main striker right now. Pretty much because Luke de Jong hasn't been able to keep up the standards that he shown in July and August, when he pretty much gave Sevilla the Europa League title. And the first question, I don't think that Sevilla is a title-winning contender. No, I don't think so, because they are already punching above their weight. I mean, if you check Sevilla's finances and how much they are paying to players, and the fact that they have only signed five players over the 20 million threshold in their history, how can you ask a team like this to be contender? No, I think that Sevilla, they are doing definitely great. They'll be trying to stay as close to the top as they can. In fact, the fact that they have extended Lopetegui's contract until 2024 is a good omen and a good sign. Lopetegui understands that Sevilla is not a club where you can be complacent. You have to demand yourself a lot if you are there. And the fact that Sevilla backs the manager is a very good sign. But I don't think that this club can be a league contender, basically because they don't have such a squad as Barcelona, Real Madrid or Atlético de Madrid. They don't have players of that quality. And you can check the squad. They've got really good players, but they don't have top quality players apart from probably Lucas Ocampos and Jules Koundé, the French defender, who is phenomenal.
As it stands, they lie sixth, but only 2 points off the top four, which, as you say, might be a more realistic prospect. Barcelona, meantime, picked up their third straight league victory. They are 3 points behind Real Madrid in third place, but like Real Madrid, have played three more games than Atletico, the leaders. Impressive here, a brace for Leo Messi and also two goals for Antoine Griezmann. The second one was a bit special. Jules, did you catch that?
Yeah, I watched it. I thought it was really good. I thought finally there's a bit of structure to that team. They used the pitch really well, I thought. The movement was really good. And when Griezmann plays like this, I mean, I think it's fantastic. I liked his first goal and how smooth the turn was, because it was a deflection. He had to, you know, he had to be on his toes. He had to be ready, and it's a great finish. And I think I'd never want to hear anyone again tell me that Martin Braithwaite deserved to start in that team ahead of Antoine Griezmann. Ever, you hear me? Ever.
I'm not going to say that. I'm not going to say that. But Antoine Griezmann, I mean, he has to show this level more often. That's for sure. Because he is a player that we know that he can play this well. And against Granada, he was very good. And as Jules said, his reaction in the first goal was excellent. Then the French connection in the second goal is a very promising one for Barcelona as well. Because Ousmane Dembélé, for physical reasons mainly, he hasn't been able to play more than 6 or 7 games in a row, pretty much ever, in his Barcelona career. And now he seems to be physically up for that challenge. And the good thing about Barcelona right now is that I still believe that they are in a transitional season. I still believe that this season is going to be more positive than the previous one, because at least Barcelona is changing and they needed to change. And yeah, it's worth lamenting not having Luis Suarez or having sold him to Atletico de Madrid, because the Atletico is a direct rival to win the league title. But, you know, there were players like Luis Suarez or Arturo Vidal that weren't going to give anything new to Barcelona anymore. So it's great to see that the young Pedri, Dembélé, players like this, young, the future of Barcelona, they are little by little getting better. And I believe that the last month has been really positive for Barcelona, and the last game especially, because the difference between the win at Granada and the win against Valladolid or the win at Bilbao is that against Granada, Barcelona didn't suffer at the end of the game. They wrap it up very quickly. And this is something that we haven't seen this season. They won 4-0 comprehensively, and Messi was phenomenal again, to the point that he is already the La Liga Pichichi after having had a very slow start of the season.
Mm. Oh, very interesting. A couple of other tweets that have come in, one from Aklef Hanif, who says, I find it amazing. No clubs in Spain or Italy are even a slightest bit interested in Mesut Ozil. I feel he could do well in the latter, as it seems a shame at 32 to be considering a move to MLS or Turkey.
Yeah, but only one thing, and probably James will say something similar, but who can pay Mesut Ozil in Spain?
Right.
Apart from Atletico de Madrid, who doesn't need him because they've got Joao Felix, Barcelona and Real Madrid. The thing is that probably many Premier League fans would be surprised about how low the wages can be in La Liga in comparison to the Premier League.
What do you think, James?
Yeah, in Italy, it's all about cutting costs at the moment. I mean, Ericsson is the kind of poster boy of that, in that this time last year, Inter paid between 20 and 27 million euro for him, and they're paying him 7 million a year net, and no one's willing to kind of take him on. So, or at least at this stage, and certainly not for a fee. So the prospects of Ozil going to Serie A seem very far-fetched, unless he was to take a significant decrease on his wages. I mean, I like the Turkish angle. I like the idea of him going to Fenerbahce.
Good.
That would be sweet.
Also in our bulging mailbag, Andrew says, can we have a mention for Edgar Davids' interesting debut as manager of Olhanense. this went well in classic Davids fashion, yes?
Unfortunately, I missed his debut. It was a 0-0, though, by the looks of it, against, how am I going to butcher this name? Lusitano Evora.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That's how you say it, yeah?
That's how you say it? Okay, great. he got sent off. So he'll miss their next game, James, which, you know, as an avid fan of the Campeonato de Portugal Prio, they will be resuming the championship on the next week, clearly.
Oh, no, it's Lagos, isn't it? Down in the Algarve.
Wednesday, Lagos.
Yeah
Lagos.
After that, they've got Peñalovense.
Huge game.
Yeah, that's huge. They'll miss Davids on the sideline. Mm. Although it depends
how long he'll be banned for, whether he'll be back for the Peñalovense game.
But tactically, you could see what he wanted to do.
What was it he wanted to do? Get home early.
Get in the shower early.
Anyway, sorry, listener, that's really, really shoddy. And the Portuguese third division deserves better. We'll be up to speed next time we touch on Edgar Davids' burgeoning career down there. But on the subject of Dutch and football, next up, let's get a brief window into the wonderful world of the Eredivisie with our pal Mikael Jongsma.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network.
Mikael, thank you so much for joining us.
Good afternoon, James. How are you doing?
Very, very well, thank you. So, top two this weekend, excitingly, coming together in the Eredivisie, Ajax against PSV, and it was a bit of a cracker.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is always the biggest game in Dutch football when it comes to competitiveness. From a historical point of view, it's Ajax Feyenoord, but these two teams have dominated the Dutch landscape over the last few decades, and both look in really good shape at the moment, especially PSV, who were surprisingly taking it 2-0 lead as well in the Amsterdam Arena, or the Johan Cruyff Stadion as it is called now. But for some reason, they couldn't really hold on, and it finished in a 2-2 draw, which leaves the title race wide open.
Mm. Four teams within 3 points now at the top of the Eredivisie. One of the reasons that they couldn't hold on was Ajax dusting off their brand new signing, Sebastian Allaire, picked up from West Ham. This is a move which has caused some surprise among observers of West Ham season so far. Does it make more sense to you over there?
Yeah, absolutely. He's been tracked by Ajax for quite some time. They've talked with him even when he was still at Utrecht. He made his name in Dutch football a few years ago at Utrecht with current Ajax manager Erik ten Hag being his manager. So the two know each other really well. Stylistically, he seems like an ideal fit for this Ajax side as well, being the type of target man that is quite good with his feet as well, to throw in a cliche. And he is known by the coach. The club has scouted him thoroughly. And for Haller, at one point, it was quite clear that this was the move he wanted to make. And I think that is what, in the end, accelerated the deal as well.
He's possibly happier there than he was at the London Stadium. So, and he was actually involved in the goal which brought Ajax level from 2-0 down, coming back to draw 2-2 this game. He I think he set up Anthony for the equaliser.
Yeah, he did. And overall, he was a bit rusty, but I think you could instantly see the type of impact that he will be able to make at this Ajax side. Ajax don't really have that type of player at the moment. They have Klaas and Huntelaar, of course, but I think he's 37 now. He will finish his career after the season. And Haller just provides a kind of platform that makes Ajax a bit more versatile in attack, because they are known for their slick passing, and that is what they usually do. But he really offers them an extra route, even though he can participate in the ground jewels as well. And the way he set up Anthony for the 2-2 was actually quite nifty. And he had already scored even just before, but that goal was rightly ruled out offside. So people are really curious to see what kind of impact he will make, and he has a good reputation in the Eredivisie. That's for Ajax is typically one of those signings where they feel like they have a proven striker with a good pedigree, still approaching his top years as well. And the fact that he can do it in the bigger games is not really a surprise, because as Rafa probably can tell you, he was quite magnificent at Frankfurt in the Bundesliga as well.
Mikael, we don't really get to talk about PSV all that much. I mean, I was surprised that they were able to appoint someone like Roger Schmidt, given his reputation. I know he's been in China for a while, but they went into this game on 5 straight wins. They'd scored 4 in 3 of them. They've got some really, really good young players. They've even been able to beat some of kind of Europe's elite to Sangare, the midfield player. We already mentioned Kone is one of the guys from Toulouse. He was another one. What's going right for PSV, and how do they look under Schmidt at the moment in general?
Yeah, the appointment of Smir Schmidt has been a bit of a game changer, because he is typically the type of coach that you would normally not see in the Eredivisie, a guy with quite some experience before. But he has been able to attract a lot of really interesting players. I think Philip Max was always on the radar of many European, not top sides maybe, but at least approaching a type of level. And as you say, Sangare was one of the players that was touted for a move to the Premier League. And the fact that Roger Schmidt is there means that these type of players will all of a sudden consider a club like PSV. And they have just a plethora of attacking talent. It's absolutely ridiculous. And I think in general, this PSV side, they are still not completely clicking. They're still very much a work in progress, and Schmidt has attracted quite some critique before, because he's been quite rotation mad throughout this season. But it looks like they seem quite fresh. They have a lot of potential, and I think this is a really interesting side to keep an eye on.
Mikael, I mean, we've seen Ryan Gravenberch playing in the Champions League with Ajax, and when he's been really good and even scored a great goal. But Arthur, in this game, I mean, he was outstanding. For someone so young, and I know you've seen many amazing young Dutch players coming through the Ajax Academy and other academies, but how would he compare to what you'd seen before?
Yeah, he is truly spectacular, and it's almost impossible to think he's just 18. I remember a couple of seasons ago, he played for the young Ajax side, which plays in the second tier, and he looked absolutely amazing there already, just completely dominating the midfield. And on a personal level, I kind of expected him to step in the footsteps of Frenkie de Jong right after he moved to Barcelona. Last year, he did struggle a bit with the step up, but this season he seems so incredibly comfortable. And I think he's one of the most amazing midfield talents that I've seen in the league for ages.
Right.
And there have been plenty, of course, because Frenkie de Jong was there only 2 years ago.
So as it stands, Mikael, you've got, as I mentioned, 4 teams in 3. Ajax on 35 points, PSV, sorry, a point behind them, then Feyenoord and Vitesse both on 32. You've had some really tight title races of late in the Eredivisie. Are we heading for another one this time?
Yeah, this one is said to be really spectacular because it's not just Ajax and PSV that are doing well. It's Feyenoord that look really solid on their the veteran of Dutch football, Dirk Advocaat, who is still as fanatic about wanting to win as ever. And Vitesse have been the real surprise package with Lech being their manager, and he has done a really good job. And I think Vitesse are a bit of an interesting case because they're obviously not playing in Europe anymore because of the odd situation with Corona and everything. They've scheduled the top games all just quite late in the season, so you're going to see a lot of Ajax, PSV, Ajax, Feyenoord, those type of games in the next few weeks. And Vitesse have had many tougher opponents already, so their schedule had been a bit heavier than that of the other teams so far. So it's going to be really interesting. And I mean, even a team like AZ is only 7 points away from them. That's a team with 5 Dutch internationals at the moment. So I think overall the breadth of quality that you have in this league is quite unique. I haven't seen that for quite a long time, although the gap between the top sides and the bottom half side is quite worrying at the moment.
You're gagging for it, I'm gagging for it. It's Ligue 1, and here's Julien Laurens to tell us all about it. Jules, 1 point, un point, separating the top three.
Yes, that's right. Lyon are winter champions. Yes. They drew at Rennes on Saturday night. They were 2-0 down. They were not playing well.
Right.
They found a way of coming back to get a point that keep them at the top.
Clément Grenier, their former player, set Rennes up with the opening goal. Memphis Depay gets the first goal back for Lyon, and then he sets up Jason Denayer for the 2-2. That's now 16 games unbeaten for Lyon under Rudy Garcia. How significant is it, them being winter champions? To what extent does that historically guarantee them the title at the end?
No, it doesn't guarantee you anything, but usually if you're winter champions, you end up winning the title. Certainly when PSG were in that position, it usually worked for them. And Lyon, let's not forget, don't play in Europe. They will keep Memphis Depay now. Whoever comes for him, I think, won't be able to make a deal. I think he's happy to stay too, although he was a bit not really clear on Saturday night after the game on French TV about his future. But I think the club has decided now this is it. This is an incredible chance for them to win the league for the first time in 13 years. So they have to go for it. And to do that, they need to keep Memphis because he's their best player. He's their captain. He's been really incredible this season. And they've got something really good going on. The way that Lucas Paqueta has adapted, the way he's changed their game, the way Rudy Garcia, in fairness, who deserves some credit for how well they've played in the last 3 months, really, by changing a bit the way they used to attack a lot on the wings. Now it's more central with Aouar and Paqueta, but still quite good on the wings as well with Dubois and Cornet, for example. It's been really good, and the way they play on the counter too, they're really good fun to watch, and they're really solid. I think they will be there until the end. I don't know if they will win it or if PSG or Lille will build them to it, but they will be there until the end.
Doesn't even mention Marseille.
I was coming to it. You don't you see how you are?
Jules, and what about Moussa Dembélé?
Yes.
I mean, how big is going to be his loss?
Mm. No, he was not playing. He was not starting anyway. And I hope for him that move to Atletico can be positive in the sense that he needs to play. He was not playing enough. He was not, as I said, starting for this Lyon team. You know, he had injuries and stuff like that that really hampered his season. I think he's a great finisher, but he needs to find a team that will almost play for him. And I think he can start with Luis Suarez up front for Atleti. But the problem I have is that I understand the 6-month loan with an option to buy, but I think he will need 6 months to adapt to La Liga and also to adapt to Simeone's football, which is very different. Even if it's not as Simeone-esque that he used to be, he's still very different to anything he's known before. So I don't know how this will work, but I think it potentially could be a really good signing and could be a good move for him if he plays. If he's again on the bench a lot and just coming on for 15, 20 minutes, I don't think that's going to help him. That was the case at Lyon already.
Lyon, as it stands, 1 point then ahead of Paris Saint-Germain and Lille. PSG this weekend getting their first win for Pochettino in his first home game in charge. beating Brest 3-0. Lille, meantime, who are behind them on goal difference, had a 1-0 victory against bottom club Nîmes. Monaco moving up to fourth. Jules, they had a 3-0 victory against Angers, who face PSG next. What about Raymond Domenech, Jules, at Nantes?
Yes, they drew, which is the second draw in a row now since he took charge. It's good that they scored. They didn't do it in the first game. It was not great, to be fair. And Montpellier were a bit disappointing, although they took the lead. But without TG Savanier, it's not the same Montpellier team. But for Nantes, it's good at least that they're not losing under Domenech. I think they still need to improve massively going forward, which I'm not sure he can do it. But certainly that was a positive point away from home like this. Well, it was a positive point against a team like Montpellier that, you know, is usually quite good. So it's good for PSG and Pochettino. It's a good win. And just on Brest, they were fantastic. They didn't deserve to lose 3-0. They could easily have taken a point because they played so well on the counter-attack. They've got a player called Romain Fèvre, who is fantastic, a young player who was at the Monaco Academy, who is going to be really, really good. So remember the name. And just quickly on Monaco, because Kevin Volland has been incredible. And again, he was so good on Saturday. Really, really impressive. Not just the goal he scored, but everything. The way he works for the team, his linker play. He's just such an intelligent player as well. It's really good to see him at that kind of form, because he arrived and I think he was really short of match fitness. And it took him a bit of time to get going. But now it's a real pleasure to watch him play.
Super. And Marseille had a 0-0 draw with Dijon.
Yeah, they did, which was the disappointing game of the night, really, because they were really poor. And I think we need to talk about Dimitri Payet, which again was on the bench. He came on in midweek before to score a goal that was really important. And I think he thought he was going to start in that game, and he ended up on the bench. He came on and was really not bothered, was absolutely atrocious when he came on. And he had a bit of a go at Villas-Boas on Instagram and Twitter. What it looked like, reminding Villas-Boas how good his stats were since, I don't know, for the last 18 months, which has got a point, but this season he's been pretty bad most of the time. And when he scored that goal in midweek last week, he had a reaction that it looked like he was saying to Villas-Boas, "Are you crazy? Are you crazy to put me, Dimitri Payet, on the bench?" And the fact that he was again on the bench, I thought was quite funny at the weekend. And maybe that was just AVB saying, like, you know what, I don't care what you say. If you're not good enough, if you're not working hard enough at training, you're going to be on the bench. And he was again. So it'd be very interesting to see on Wednesday night in Le Classique, in the French Community Shield, to see if Payet starts or not.
Right, right. So the French Community Shield coming up on Wednesday, Jules. This is another huge chance. Marseille, who beat Paris Saint-Germain last time they faced each other.
Yeah, you're right. In September, 1-0, if you remember that very aggressive game, full of controversy and incident and red cards. Let's see if this same atmosphere. Obviously, PSG have a different manager. It'll be Pochettino's first classic as a manager against AVB. It's played in Lens with no fans, of course. But it'd be very interesting to see. It's the first title available, if you believe that's a title, for the season. So it could be good for Marseille to win it and win another trophy. It's been a long time. But for Pochettino to arrive and win against Marseille, it would be good. Neymar is back. Kimpembe is back. I don't know if they will start, but they were training today. Or they starting training on Monday, sorry. So it'd be interesting to see what Poch does with them.
Very good. Well, we've got one or two other exciting stories to bring you, like Schalke with the win and some Parma drama down the wrong inner city as well. We'll get onto those next.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX is Welcome to Wrexham. Catch all new episodes Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show, sponsored by Paddy Power.
Rafa, Schalke, 30 games without a win. This weekend, they face Hoffenheim. 31 games would have tied the record, but instead, they win 4-0. Extraordinary.
They won in style, which is even more surprising, perhaps. I mean, Hoffenheim were poor. They were the sort of side that maybe Schalke had the best chance of winning against, but they still took their chances really well. Matthew Hoppe, who'd only ever scored one goal for the under-19s for Schalke, was given a chance by Christian Gross, and literally the first chance he had, he took beautifully well a little dink with his left foot, which is his weaker foot, over the keeper, and then he just continued scoring, and Amin Harit added a fourth. Harit was superb throughout, setting up those goals for Hoppe, and we all don't know really what Christian Gross has done to coax that kind of performance out of Harit, because he hasn't shown that type of quality of the last 18 months or so, but we know there is a hugely talented player there. Mm. And it finally clicked for Schalke.
Schalke picking up their first clean sheet since last February. Extraordinary. Hoppe, meantime, a new Hoppe, as I hope Schalke are dubbing him, picking up a hat-trick in 21 minutes. As you mentioned, he's not really started much, nor has he scored at a senior level either, but so composed for all three of the goals.
Hadn't scored at any level much, really, before for Schalke, which makes us all the more surprising and impressive. But yeah, I think Christian Gross just had a good feeling for this guy. You know, he gave him a chance. He was playing just ahead of Mark Uth, who's their regular centre forward, if you will. Vedat Sibisevic, you remember, was fired not long ago, having only played less than half a season for them as a free agent. And Pop has done amazingly well. He's become the first American to actually score three goals in a game in the Bundesliga, which just shows you just how extraordinary his impact has been.
Mm-hmm. Hoffenheim playing in purple in this match. How bad are they?
They beat Bayern.
I can't think of any pun here with purple and playing badly, or, you know, going through a bad spell or anything. But they were pretty poor, James. They were pretty poor. And question marks are being raised, or questions are being asked about Sebastian Hoeneß, the nephew of Uli Hoeneß, the Bayern president, who's in charge there, of course, as a coach. They've now lost, I think, three of the last four games, not playing well at all. They did do okay-ish for some parts of the game before they went behind, and then it completely fell apart. So I don't think he's necessarily on the line just yet, but they need to really ramp up their output. Otherwise, he might lose his job.
Mm. Hoffenheim currently lying in 14th place in the 18-team Bundesliga, 5 points above the playoff relegation, or the relegation playoff spot. Now, meantime in Italy, an even more dramatic position for the ever-popular Parma. They are penultimate right now in Serie A, but 2 points off safety after yet another defeat this weekend. Last week, they fired their manager, Fabio Liverani, and brought back, James, the tremendously successful in the past Roberto D'Aversa, who had left them over the summer over, you know, different views on investment and that kind of thing.
Yeah, the sporting director who brought in D'Aversa left for Genoa. There was some speculation around about this time last year that having worked with Antonio Conte, he was going to go to Inter. And I think when Fagiano left, D'Aversa wanted to know what the club's plans were, and ultimately he was dismissed after getting them up from the third division to the second division to the first division, and had consolidated their place within it with a very old team. In the meantime, you know, Parma sold a controlling stake in the club to the Kraus Group, who came in. They'd already basically made Fabio Liverani D'Aversa's successor. They'd already appointed a new sporting director before the Kraus Group were at the helm. And then they went and signed a load of very, very young players. So you have this kind of, you have two extremes at Parma of guys like Bruno Alves, who are, you know, in their 50s. And then, you know, guys like Maxim Bouzy, who's probably still going to school. And it didn't really mix well to make Parma competitive. So they brought D'Aversa back. I think they'll need to intervene again in the January transfer window to keep them up, because they haven't scored at home, I think, in seven games, which is the worst run that a Serie A team has had in that respect since 1977. Yeah, they've lost five straight. They're second bottom. And I think urgent action was needed. So I know there are a lot of Parma fans out there. They'll be hoping they can turn this around because it has been looking bleak of late.
Well, this latest defeat coming at the hands of Simone Inzaghi's Lazio, a 2-0 defeat at the Ennio Tardini. Lazio, who were very grateful for the points given how they've slipped out of the top four picture of late, have a huge chance this weekend to relaunch their Champions League ambitions and perhaps beyond with the Rome derby against Roma. Roma currently lying third, Lazio at eighth, 6 points behind the Giallorossi. Ooh, that's a big one.
Yeah, it's Friday night, I think, this game. And it was Lazio's birthday a couple of days ago. They turned 121, which for them is always a big deal because, you know, as the kind of slogan on the back of their collar says, they are the first team in Rome. They had an audience with the Pope and seem to be hitting form again, as Atalanta are after the Champions League group stages are finished, basically now that they don't have to play three games a week as exacting as the ones in the Champions League. There is Coppa Italia coming in the meantime. They are playing much better. But Roma have been in fantastic form under Fonseca, and I suppose, you know, the knock on Fonseca has been his record in the big games, and that wasn't necessarily answered at the weekend, even though he's drawn at home with Juventus and Inter so far this season. I suppose if you look at the context of both those games, they played half an hour against 10 men Juve and didn't beat them. In fact, Ronaldo equalised when Juve were down to 10 men, and in this Inter game they took the lead and didn't beat them. So he didn't win either of the derbies last year. First one was a bit of a baptism of fire, although they did draw, and then the second one they dominated, but Lazio somehow contrived to get a point after, I think, Paulo Lopez kind of threw it into his own net. So should be a good game with Dzeko Immobile and Pellegrini, Luis Alberto and Mkhitaryan in such great form. Mkhitaryan's been brilliant so far this season. One of the Player of the Year candidates in Serie A.
Interesting. Another of the Player of the Year candidates, meanwhile, featuring in probably the game we'll finish off with today, which was Benevento, managed by the other Inzaghi, Pippo, losing 4-1 at home to Atalanta. Atalanta continuing their excellent run of form. They're unbeaten since the end, as you mentioned, of the Champions League group stages, scoring loads of goals again, and all of this without Papu Gomez.
Yeah, I think it's been timely for Gianpiero Gasperini that Josip Iličić has hit form again, just as Papu and Gasp had that altercation. The bus stop at halftime in the Midtjylland game. I think also to have Luis Muriel, you can always just count on him to come off the bench and score goals. It was quite funny at the weekend. He was told to kind of get ready and warm up to come on, and every time he got up, Atalanta scored. And he's got to the stage now where he thinks it's superstition that, you know, when they need a goal, Gasp basically says, come on, Luis, warm up. And lo and behold, they scored. And then when he comes on, he scores as well. I think he's third all time now among players who've scored the most goals from the bench in Serie A. So, but Iličić, I mean, this was all about him. He was it just felt like he could do whatever he wanted. He was a complete it was a masterful performance. I think he had 156 touches. He hit the post, set up a wonderful goal. I mean, he was unplayable, and it's great to see, because I think, you know, up until lockdown last year, he was the best player in Serie A, and if he can get back to that level, then, you know, as we're seeing across Europe, given title races are so tight, you know, Atalanta were the best team in the second half of last year. If they can kind of replicate that again, then they might challenge as well.
Although in those days they had Papu Gomez turning out for them. This time he's more busy posting pictures of his heat map to show how his average position isn't where his manager said it was when he said he wasn't following instructions. That's all going to end well. Quick question from Chewy, who wants to know, can Ahmed Diallo make an impact in the United first team this season, or is it going to be under-23s for him alongside Pellestri? This is the €41 million signing, Ahmed Diallo, who's played, what, 24 first-team minutes, is it?
Yeah, he made his debut last November, so November 2019, in that 7-0, 7-1 win against Udinese, scored. Yeah, diminutive, looks like he can easily push him off the ball, but he's strong. I think it would be a surprise to me if he was to come in and make an impact straight away, although Gasperini wanted to keep him around, was kind of... he thought there were some difficulties in him getting a work permit and that he could maybe have the second half of the season at Atalanta, which I think goes to show that, you know, Gasp feels he's ready, even though he hasn't really played a lot this year. But there are going to be enough games going around. You know, United still in the Europa League. There's FA Cup as well. So maybe he'll get some opportunities in those games. But I think United were looking for a right winger anyway. You know, a lot of people looked at that as being, the wing position in general as being Sancho's. But maybe in the meantime, Diallo can try and make it his own. But I'd be patient with him.
Excellent. Well, that brings us to the end of this Totally Football Show European edition. Unless Alvaro or Jules or James or Rafa, there's anything else you want to leave our listener with?
Yes, I have to say something. The Spanish Super Cup starts on Wednesday. And basically, the first title of the season is going to be given on Sunday. And I think that the Super Cup, a little bit like the Carabao Cup in the UK, can have a revamping effect for the clubs that play it and the clubs that win it, obviously.
Excellent. Who's in it, Alvaro?
It's Real Madrid, Athletic Club Bilbao, Barcelona and Real Sociedad.
Wow. Okay. That's right. It's that new format, four-team Super Cup. Mm-hmm.
Yes. It will be played in Andalusia. In last season, it was played in Saudi Arabia. And it's going to be interesting because Real Madrid and Barcelona could hypothetically meet in the final. And it will be very nice to see another El Clásico.
If they can get there.
Yeah, exactly. For me, it would be nicer to watch a Basque derby, but I know that for the majority of the listeners of this show, probably a Real Madrid-Barcelona in the final can be more attractive.
Right. No, I mean, but if they manage to get out of Madrid with the weather, you know.
Yeah, in fact, that's true. Real Madrid won't, apparently, fly to Madrid from Pamplona. They will go straight to Málaga now. And basically, they won't be in Madrid for 8 or 9 days, but I think that they can do without being at home for a week.
I'm sure. Excellent. Well, you'll bring us up to date on what happens there in next week's show. For now, it's many, many thanks to all of you and to producer Charlie and you, listener. It's been great being with you for the last hour or so. We'll be back next week, so do make sure you join us then. Have a super time in the meanwhile. For now, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Keep up to date with everything Totally at thetotallyfootballshow.com and follow us at The Totally Show on Twitter and Insta. Check out all of The Athletic's football podcasts on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places, or listen ad-free on The Athletic app. The Totally Football Show is a Muddy Knees Media production and sponsored by Paddy Power.
The Athletic.